Welcome everyone to Monday Match Analysis. I'm Gil Gross and it is time for a preview of Wimbledon 2022. I will give you dark horses, upset alerts, early popcorn matchups, quarterfinal previews, final weekend preview, and a prediction for who will lift the trophy at the end of this great fortnight, the third major of the year, arguably the biggest event of the calendar. Now, there are some circumstances this year. No Russian or Belarusian players due to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. No rankings points will be awarded as a result of the response by the tours to that Russian and Belarusian ban. I do think that these things will not get in the way of this being an incredibly entertaining and rewarding event for fans and players who are able to compete at least, because at the end of the day, once these athletes get on the court and begin competing for the ultimate prize, I'm confident that these things will fade into the distance. With that being said, when we look back at the rankings at the end of the year, it is certainly going to be noticeable that whatever we see over the course of the next 2 weeks are not going to be reflected in those rankings. And that will certainly be something that will have lasting effects. That aside, let's get into this quarter-by-quarter preview. Beginning with the top seed, Novak Djokovic. He's not world number one, but he is the number one seed. And he will be very anxious to pick up his first major of 2022. Here's what he'll contend with in his quarter. And I'm going to change the way that I read the seeds. Normally, I do it by how high a seed the players are, but I'm actually going to do it by section this time. So Djokovic is in a section with Riley Opelka, Nicholas Basilashvili, and Miomir Kecmanovic. On the bottom section is Carlos Alcaraz with Jannik Sinner, John Isner, and Oscar Otte. My overall impressions of this quarter is that the middle seeds, you know, Sinner, Opelka, Isner, Basilashvili, and there should be Otte, by the way, in there. Otte and Kecmanovic, I think those are fairly strong, you know, low seeds. But man, there are not a lot of players who I feel great about. You know, there are not a lot of players who I think, you know, that I would put above 80% chance that they make round three. There are a lot of question marks there. I'll get more into them in a moment. Okay, let's move on. And I will share first my dark horses. Andy Murray / James Duckworth. They play in the first round. That's why I said / instead of comma, which would mean or, okay? But look, Andy, there's a lot to like, obviously, about Murray as a, you know, former Wimbledon champion, someone who will have the support of the crowd, someone who moves very well on the grass, someone who has a fantastic return of serve edge traditionally on these grass courts. Someone whose best weapon, not biggest weapon, still the forehand, even for Murray, but best weapon, relatively, the backhand, is more effective on grass. He gets more penetration through the court, and I think the advantage that he has backhand to backhand is accentuated on grass. So many things to like about Andy Murray's grass court game, including, by the way he serves, hitting primarily slice serve. These things are all great. We know that he's had a great career on grass, but it also feels like a good moment for Andy Murray. He reconnects with Yvonne Lendl and he takes a break, and he has a training block in Florida with Lendl. I think that's exactly what he needed. He just needed a reset. He needed a kind of a fresh start, and he got that. And then he comes back and he makes the Stuttgart final and loses to Matteo Berrettini. all positive signs, all good things for Murray, and there's a lot to like coming into this Wimbledon. The only thing that you don't like is that there are questions about his health. He had to pull out of Queens because of an issue he's dealing with from an injury standpoint, and that is something to keep an eye on. But I also think his first round opponent deserves a shout out, deserves some respect. James Duckworth had a resurgent 2021. It was the first year in a long time that he was fully healthy, playing pain-free. This is a guy who's gone through eight surgeries in his career and make that nine after 2022, where he's been injured again and he's had a brutally difficult year. But when Duckworth is firing, he's got a really good serve for his height. He is a net rusher. His backhand is extremely offensive and flat. It's great on grass and any low bouncing surfaces. It's good indoors. He is an extremely aggressive player who really loves to be in control and finish points quickly. And he loves the grass. He made round three last year at Wimbledon. So I don't know what the state of his game is. He did pick up a couple of wins on the grass, but again, he's not having a good year. I just think that he's the kind of player who is certainly good enough at his best, who deserves some respect and a shout out here as a dark horse playing Andy Murray in round one. My upset alert is Nicolas Basilashvili. Not the most consistent guy in the world. He actually is losing round two recently, not round one. So that's improvement for Basilashvili, but he's below 500 for his career on the grass. It's much better for Basilashvili when he actually has more time on the ball to load up his strokes. He also doesn't have a very good serve, especially for the prototype of a player who likes to be as aggressive as Basilashvili. And he draws Lucas Rasol in round one, who qualified. Rasol hasn't played a main draw at a slam in a very long time. He's 36 years old. I had completely forgotten about him, to be completely honest. But you got to think, for a guy like Rasol, who has a big serve, who beat Thiago Seboth Wild or Veild, I think it's technically Veild, but I don't know if people actually call him that or not. Him and Christopher Eubanks, two players I really respect, beat them both in straight sets in qualifying. You got to think for Rasol, this is like his Super Bowl, and he's going to be really jacked up and focused. And for Basilashvili, this is not his Super Bowl. So that's the upset alert. But as I mentioned, I have questions about some other players here. Jannik Sinner. Jannik Sinner has really struggled in his young career on grass. He has been, he's only played one match since Roland Garros after retiring at RG to Rublev with the knee injury. So I don't know if he was planning on playing more tournaments, but the knee kept him out. I think that's probably the case if I were to guess. But he came back at Eastbourne, lost first round to Tommy Paul. So he doesn't have a win coming into Wimbledon. His career record on grass is now 0-2. So Sinner's got nothing really going for him in the sense of momentum. And look, I don't think that he's going to go his career being a terrible player on grass, but I certainly don't think it's going to be a surface that, helps him, makes him, elevates his game. I don't think that either. So ultimately, it's hard to feel great about Sinner. Then you have Opelka and Isner. Opelka and Isner, I have questions about their motivation. Like, I just think the things that they've been saying, I think they're harboring quite a bit of resentment about Wimbledon's decision making. They are highly opinionated people, and they're not the kinds of players who show up week to week to week with the same level of focus and motivation. I think they deeply resent the ATP's decision about rankings points. I think they deeply resent Wimbledon's decisions about Russian and Belarusian players. And I think for those reasons, not that they're in great form either, I think for those reasons, you have to question their ability to go deep at this event as well. Look, I respect Miomir Kecmanovic. I respect both Oscar Otte and Otte's opponent, Peter Gajowczyk, who's not to be underlooked at Wimbledon either. But ultimately, there is no one here who I am eager to pick against when it comes to the top seeds, Djokovic and Carlos Alcaraz. So my quarterfinal prediction. Oh, and by the way, early popcorn, Sinner versus Wawrinka, round one. That's going to be fun. That's intriguing. Absolutely. I'm all in on that. Wawrinka's looking a lot better, by the way. He's looking healthier. I thought his win against Tiafoe in Queens was outstanding. Best I've seen him play in a very long time. So I'm excited for that. Yeah, my quarterfinal. It's going to be Djokovic defeats Alcaraz. As I said in my power rankings, I'm optimistic about Alcaraz at Wimbledon, generally speaking. Look, I see a player with really nice, compact stroke production, takes the ball early, is offensively minded, has every offensive tool you could possibly want. In addition to that, fantastic variety. These things pay dividends on grass. I mean, I understand that there's development to go on his serve, but and there's inexperience, and inexperience is the biggest thing that you would dock Alcaraz on. And believe me, I am docking him on that, but I still think he'll make the quarterfinal. Djokovic as well, I am fairly confident of Novak, who's won four out of the last six Wimbledons. He's won the last three Wimbledons, and there is nobody here who I think he will be particularly fearful of. There are not a lot of guys who I think he doesn't care to see at Wimbledon that aren't top seeds, but I think he's glad to not see RBA, to name one. But I think it's very difficult to name guys who like he's really hoping not to see at an event like this. But certainly I don't think there's anybody in his quarter who I would put in that category. I mean, ultimately, ultimately I think it's a really positive draw for Djokovic. When it comes to Djokovic versus Alcaraz, look, I think there's a big serve return edge for Novak, and I don't think Alcaraz has the baseline consistency to make up for that and to dominate Djokovic from the baseline. I think that the kick serve advantage that we saw, or the kick serve weapon that we saw Alcaraz feature prominently in Madrid, I mean, it was the main tactic that allowed him to beat Djokovic in that match, is Novak just couldn't figure out a way to win a point on the ad side off of Alcaraz's kick serve out wide. We know that on grass, that looks completely different, with Alcaraz not getting nearly the same kind of bounce off the court that he would get in Madrid at Wimbledon. It wouldn't be close. And so I want to throw in that tactical nugget, but for many reasons, I favor Djokovic in that matchup. So Djokovic to the semifinals. Let's move on to Casper Ruud's quarter. Casper Ruud, the number three seed, coming off the Roland Garros final, however, yet to win on grass, lost in his first round at Queens against Ryan Peniston. And I ignore the exhibitions, but for whatever it's worth, he lost to Zizou or Zizou Bergs in the exhibition round two. I don't care about that, actually. I regret saying that, to be honest, because I don't care what happens in these exhibitions. Anyway, let's take a look at this quarter. Casper Ruud has, who's his top seed here? I guess it's, oh yeah, okay, it's Pablo Carreño Busta. Okay, Casper Ruud has Pablo Carreño Busta, Francis Tiafoe, and Sebastian Baez. Then on the bottom, you have Hubert Hurkacz. Hurkacz has Dimitrov, Nori, no, so he has Nori, Dimitrov, and Tommy Paul. All right. This quarter is super unbalanced, like really, really unbalanced, because I think Hurkacz's section is loaded. I think it's stacked. I think that Rude's section is probably the weakest in the entire draw. All right, we'll get more into it. My dark horse here is Adrian Mannarino. I gave strong consideration to David Goffin also, but I just wanted to choose one. I went with Mannarino. Look, Mannarino, I loved what I saw from him in January and February on the, in Australia and on the quick indoor hard courts. I just thought he was playing great tennis throughout those events. And he always goes away during clay court season. He's just a non-factor because his game gives him no chance to have any success, not only on clay, but even on slow courts. Like even in Miami and Indian Wells, he just has no chance to do well. But as soon as the bounce gets really low again and he's on these, low bouncing and ideally for him, quicker surfaces, he becomes a big factor again with his lefty slice serves, with his extraordinarily flat but deep and precise hitting, his ability to change direction. Mannarino is a very, very dangerous player, and we saw the troubles that he gave to eventual quarterfinalist Roger Federer, where he was likely going, well, okay, at least he was definitely in position to win that match before he unfortunately slipped and got injured. Mannarino also, he has Hubert Hurkacz. He has Hubert Hurkacz in round three. That is only if he can get through Tommy Paul, the number 30 seed. And when Hurkacz and Mannarino played in Melbourne, Hurkacz was flummoxed. Like he had no idea what to do. He was absolutely lost on the court. I'm not exaggerating. Anyone who watched the match knows that's true. So, I mean, matchup wise, it's kind of a one that you circle. Like it's a red pen circle. Like Mannarino Hurkacz, can Hubie get to the net on a more regular basis? And is Mannarino's low and slow baseline rhythm going to bother Hurkacz, who doesn't love to generate, doesn't really love to generate his own pace? Is that going to bother Hurkacz as much? Once again, I mean, it's going to be a very interesting thing to watch if we do get that. So, Mannarino is my dark horse with a shout out to Gafan. Upset alert is Pablo Carreño Busta. He still does not look right mentally to me. He is not. Has never been someone who has enjoyed the grass courts either. Just doesn't. I don't think he's comfortable with the movement. I don't think he appreciates the low bounce very much either. And for some reason, he hasn't looked good. And it's more his struggles in just confidence and closing matches is my main concern for him. Round one, Dusan Lajovic, moderate difficulty. Round two, potentially Alexander Bublik or Martin Fucsovics, high difficulty for an unseeded player, for unseeded players. So that's my upset alert. Popcorn matches, Hurkacz versus Davidovich-Fokina. It's the one that sticks out. I don't give Davidovich-Fokina as much of a chance as most or many kind of might, based on Fokina's name recognition. And look, his talent level, I'm a big proponent of his talent level, but I just think that he's going to get served off the court against Hurkacz. And I don't think it will be a great match, but it should be entertaining, and it's definitely the obvious popcorn match in round one. All right, quarterfinal is Hubert Hurkacz defeats Francis Tiafoe. And look, let me flesh out my opinion that I led off this quarter with. On the bottom half, you have Grigor Dimitrov, Cameron Norrie, and Hubert Hurkacz. Debatably, Adrian Mannarino. Probably four guys who I might like better than anyone on the top. Now, look, is it tough there? Like, if you're asking me, like, Mannarino versus Rude, like, might I say, like, okay, like, yes, Rude, begrudgingly? Maybe, maybe. But you kind of get my point here. Like, the bottom half. There are a lot of guys who I feel pretty comfortable moving to the quarterfinal. Top half, it's just not the case. Like, there's just not a lot to choose from. And I go with Francis Tiafoe because I think at his best, when the game is firing, the firepower he has on the serve and the forehand, the flat backhand that he brings a lot of variety to the table with, that is really aided by low bouncing grass. His hands at net, good volleyer. All of these things, I think Tiafoe at his best, to me, is probably the best grass court player in the top section of this quarter. But his form is bad. He's in no form whatsoever. He's 0-2 in the grass court season. With the exception of Estoril, he hasn't been able to really put anything together. He's one match under 500 in 2022. I think overall he's had a disappointing season. But I'm giving him the nod and sending him to the quarterfinal. I also do like him in the best of five format. I do think that he's looked impressive at Wimbledon before. It was actually a couple of years ago, 2018, he was in round three. And he was well on his way, I think, to reaching round four. And I'm gonna do a quick search to remember the opponent, but I remember he was cruising, and he got a stomach bug that like completely debilitated him. Oh, he was playing Khachanov, right? He was up two sets to love against Khachanov, and he got this stomach bug and just couldn't move and blew the two sets to love lead. And lost to Khachanov in five. He was about to go to round four, though. We know he beat Tsitsipas last year, made round three. There's enough there where I like Tiafoe to make the quarterfinal. But ultimately, I'm high on Hubert Hurkacz. I think his draw is bad. I think it's terrible. Davidovich-Fokina round one, Mannarino round three. Whether it be Dimitrov or Norrie round four. Both top 20 easily. Both arguably top 15. Norrie, I think, just misses it. But that's tough. Like, Hurkacz has a bad draw, but I'm gonna put faith in what I've seen from him. We've seen him run the table before. And I love the way he's serving. I absolutely love the way he's serving. I think it's deadly. The way he uses his backhand. I think he moves well enough to hang in baseline rallies, and his forehand is looking better than it has recently. So I still put Hurkacz through to the semifinal. We're halfway there. Let's go to Stefanos Tsitsipas's quarter. Tsitsipas is in a section with Denis Shapovalov, Roberto Bautista-Agut, and Filip Krajinovic. Matteo Berrettini is on the top half of this quarter. He is with Diego Schwartzman, Alex de Minaur, and Jensen Brooksby. My dark horse in this quarter is Nick Kyrgios. Kyrgios is on the Tsitsipas, is in the Tsitsipas section. That is a potential round three. I think Kyrgios is a better grass court player than Tsitsipas right now. That's how I feel. When they played in Halle, and I reflected it in my power rankings, I don't think that's an upset in Halle. I think that's just a reflection of the level of Kyrgios's serve versus the level of Tsitsipas's return, I think that's a mismatch. And I think it's a mismatch that Kyrgios can exploit on the surface, plain and simple. So Nick is my dark horse. I'm going to save what I'm going to say for a little bit later. Nick's my dark horse. Upset alert. I have Denis Shapovalov and Jensen Brooksby. Shapo is the 12 seed, last year's semifinalist. He gets Arthur Rinderknecht in round one. Very respectable round one opponent. I haven't heard much from Rinderknecht this year. So let me get his record because he's been awfully quiet, hasn't he? But serves very big. Comes to net a ton. Oh, it looks like he's been injured. I think that's why. He is. Oh no. Never mind. He's 12 and 12 on the season, tour level. So yeah, he's been fine. Beat Hugo Humbert in Stuttgart. So that's a decent grass court win. Yeah, aggressive player, big game, 6'5", big serve, serves at like 130 pretty regularly. And Chapo, I just can't trust him right now. The decision making is bad, the control is just not good. The footwork is still inconsistent, and he's not putting balls on the court. And I don't have a lot of faith right now. Jensen Brooksby has lost his mojo and his confidence as well. He's really struggling, and his first round opponent is Mikhail Kukushkin, who's a nightmare on grass. You know, a really long history from Kukushkin of solid results at Wimbledon, results that exceed his general level as a player. So I think that's a tough one for Brooksby as well. My early popcorn match, I did not see anything that stuck out to me in round one, so I had to go to round two. Alex de Minaur versus Jack Draper. I think that should be an interesting one. You know, Draper is a player who could definitely build some buzz as a British player at Wimbledon. De Minaur is also a player who I think will be really poised and motivated to have a big run here because he loves the grass, and I really think that De Minaur is playing solid tennis in 2022. And confident tennis. And that's going to be a round two match that I think could be really excellent. A great contrast in styles, too, with Draper being the bigger hitter, the player who's going to try to get to net more and keep the points a little bit shorter. And Demonor, definitely someone who can use his scrambling on this surface and is far more mobile than Draper, but doesn't quite have the weaponry. Would be intrigued to see that one. Quarterfinal here is Berrettini defeats Bautista Agut. So, as I said, let me begin with RBA. First of all, RBA has really frustrated Kyrgios. Nick has not had any joy playing against Bautista Agut. Agut's got a good return of serve, and I think his I don't know exactly what it is, but I feel like his consistency has driven Kyrgios crazy, generally speaking. So it's a 3-1 head-to-head for RBA. Really 2-1 though, because Nick retired the last time they were due to play. So I'd say 2-1, but it was not competitive at the U.S. Open last time they played, and I was at that match. Berrettini is looking good here. You know, now De Minaur beat him in Australia earlier in the year, not at the Australian Open, but at the ATP Cup. However, I think Berrettini is just looking pretty upset proof. And I think other than De Minaur, I'm not prepared. I certainly am not tempted enough to pick De Minaur over Berrettini. I do think that Matteo has a pretty solid draw if you look at the vast majority of the names here. I mean, Brooksby as I mentioned, his round three, I don't think he's going to get there. And I don't think, I'm not seeing a lot of top 50 names here. I mean, Bonzi is there. Schwartzman is obviously a good top 15 seed to have. I think it's going to be Demonor instead. So, yeah, it's a decent draw for Berrettini, and I move him through. Finally, we have Rafael Nadal's quarter. Rafa. Rafa has Marin Cilic, Botic van de Zandschulp, and Lorenzo Sonego. Felix Auger-Aliassime is on the other half, in the other section, and he has Taylor Fritz, Holger Rune, and Dan Evans. This quarter is very strong. It's very strong. And Nadal has not been done favors here, I don't think. My dark horse here is Jason Kubler. He's an Aussie. I have not put his game under a microscope, under a magnifying glass. I have not done that. But similar to when I made Aslan Karatsev a dark horse at the Australian Open in 2 years ago, I feel like Kubler's results are something that should really be taken notice of. Something that has caught my eye, and I respect it a lot. He's on an absolute tear, and he's got a somewhat favorable draw potentially as well. So it would not surprise me if Kubler makes some noise here. He's made back-to-back challenger finals on the heels of Roland Garros, and then he's qualified for Wimbledon. So that's a lot of wins. That's a lot of wins and only one loss in that final where he actually retired. So he hasn't lost match point in a really long time. I hear good things about the guy. Kubler, Jason Kubler is my dark horse here. Lorenzo Sonego is my upset alert. Only yeah, he plays Dennis Kudla. We know that Kudla's best on grass, and Sonego actually has fared decently well at Wimbledon, but he's still upset alert for drawing Dennis Kudla. My early popcorn is FAA versus Cressy, round one. Man, that's going to be one to watch. Look, Maxime Cressy, after having an incredible January, has not kept it up at all. And I think we've kind of seen that, like, he's probably not going to be a factor on most surfaces, Cressy. I could be wrong, but that's probably going to be the case. However, on grass, if he's confident, he can certainly be an issue as a serve and volleyer. And his volley skills truly are something else, truly are much at a much more advanced level than we are used to seeing in nowadays tour. I think his second serve can still be a little bit suspect, and the double faults can come in under pressure. And I don't think that although he serves big, I don't know if his serve, when it comes to the spots and the variation, I don't think it's refined as some of the other players who we like so much on grass, like Hurkacz and Berrettini. But regardless, look, this is going to be a match where FAA gets no rhythm whatsoever. And we're likely to see some tie breaks, and it's likely to get tight. And if I'm FAA, I hate this. I hate this round one. So, man, keep an eye on this one. It's a tough draw for Auger-Aliassime. We got to see what it looks like. Ultimately, though, Fritz is having a big week, and he's got a big serve and a highly offensive game. I don't think he likes the low bounce, but ultimately, Taylor Taylor's somewhat dangerous at Wimbledon, top 20. I'd power rank him top 20. Marin Cilic, I power rank him top 10. Von de Zanschulp, power rank him probably top 25. This is just a super strong quarter. But ultimately, here's what it comes down to. I still have Nadal defeating Felix Auger-Aliassime. Let me start with Rafa. Here's what it comes down to. Oh, and Sam Querrey, by the way, is Nadal's potential round two. That's not easy either. So you look at Querrey. You look at Cilic. You look at FAA. Ultimately, if Nadal is able to return serve, I don't think he loses any of those matches. He just needs to put good returns in play. And I don't think any of those players are good enough to threaten Rafa if he's able to do that. So, it comes down to like, look, gun to my head, is Nadal going to get served off the court by Cilic? Is he going to get served off the court by FAA? Served off the court by Querrey? And I don't think so. Look, so there's a very easy thing to focus on. There is going to be a barometer for Nadal's success, and it's going to be what does his return of serve look like? But if it looks fine, which I think it will, I think ever since Moya has taken the reins, his return of serve has been better on grass than when Tony was forcing him to stand in and try to take it early and it wasn't working. And the adjustment from RG to Wimbledon was just too drastic and it was not a good strategy. Ever since they've kind of gone back on that and Nadal has assumed a more comfortable return position, I think he's returning better. And I just don't think that any of these players, or even if it's Fritz and not Cilic, let's say it's Fritz, I don't think any of these players can compete with Nadal if Nadal, or unless they have incredibly high success rates on their first serve. That's my thought process. But I'm still high on FAA, and I think FAA should be really confident. We've seen the slam consistency from Felix. We've seen how well he's competed against top players, including what could be a rematch against Rafa in the quarterfinal. And absolutely, Felix will be saying, well, look, if I competed that well against Nadal on the clay in Paris, then I have a great chance here at Wimbledon. I think that's going to be Felix's mentality. Do I think that one plus one is going to equal two in such a straightforward fashion? No. Not necessarily. I think Felix played just an outstanding level in that match, and I don't think it's a given that he is going to be able to bring that again. Not to mention, I think Nadal, when he was at his best, just, well, again, still had the upper hand. There were kind of lapses in that match that gave Felix the upper hands in the sets that he won. But anyway, look, it would still be a very competitive quarterfinal. Great respect for what Felix might be able to bring to the table and challenge Nadal here. So I'm ready to reveal my final weekend. And I'm going to do it all at once. So you're about to see everything in 3, 2, 1. Djokovic defeats Hurkacz in three sets. Nadal defeats Berrettini in three sets. Nadal defeats Djokovic in five sets. As far as the semifinals are concerned, I still believe there is a gap. There is a gap between the group of grass court players who we hold in very high regard, Hurkacz, Berrettini, Felix, because they are elite servers, elite, and against almost everyone in the entire field. That plus their ability, at least in Berrettini and Felix's case, to attack on the forehand. In Hurkacz's case, his fantastic skills to attack net and to do a little bit more defending and finding ways with his backhand from the baseline and on return. Look, they all are tremendous grass court players. I still think that they are a tier below right now. When their serves come back, and I think they do against Nadal and Djokovic. I don't think any of those three players are ready to go toe to toe. To the extent that a Zverev or a Medvedev or a Tsitsipas on certain other surfaces, I think some of those guys on their good days, they do go toe to toe, or Alcaraz on certain days, they do go toe to toe with Djokovic and Nadal. But these grass court contenders, I don't feel that way about them. And that's why I have no hesitation and I have full confidence picking Djokovic and Nadal over Hurkacz and Berrettini, respectively. Now let me address the final. Nadal over Djokovic in five sets. I want to make this clear. If you were to say, Gil, one player can make the final, Djokovic or Nadal, who do you think is more likely to make the final? Without hesitation, I say Novak Djokovic is more likely to make the final. No hesitation. There's fewer questions about his health. There are fewer questions about, I think, his ability to be at his best in early rounds on slick grass against big hitting opponents. He's got a way better draw, a way better draw. If you look at my power rankings, I have Nadal, in order to get to the final, having to go through four players who I power ranked in the top four. Berrettini, well, three players, I guess. Yeah, three players, sorry. Berrettini, Cilic, and Felix. Three, to get to the final, just to get to the final. Novak, only one, only Hurkacz and Alcaraz. So two, sorry, two. Jeez. So it's a tougher draw. It's a tougher draw, not to mention that second round being Sam Querrey is a little bit, a good amount tougher than Djokovic probably being Thanasi Kokkinakis. Anyway, I think Djokovic is more likely to get to the final. And easily, if there's an issue with Nadal's health or something like that, Novak would quickly become the favorite. However, I think in the scenario where Nadal is in the final, it's not the technical capabilities. I like Djokovic over Nadal on this surface when it comes to technical abilities. It's a mental thing for me here. I think that if these two played in the final, Nadal would be on such a rush. I think that he would be playing with a lot of freedom, making the Wimbledon final with the momentum of the two majors at his back. I don't think he would be putting a lot of pressure on himself. He would be really embracing that moment where I do think that Djokovic would feel quite a bit of pressure. And that is an imbalance that I do think could tilt the scales towards Nadal, who I do think is probably, I think, has a better chance on grass against Djokovic than he does on hard court. I think the grass helps him. It helps his slice serve a little bit, his slice serve to the backhand. His slice backhand that I think Nadal actually uses as a pretty important tactic against Djokovic. I think Nadal's ability to flatten the forehand down the line and how potent that can be at Wimbledon, I think is even more of a weapon on the grass than it is on the hard court. I think that there are a couple of things where, as we saw in 2018 with Nadal kind of being right there with Novak, and I do think Novak has improved since 2018, mostly in the serving department. I think that they're close enough in level where the pressure thing was convincing enough for me to go with Nadal here, to go with Rafa, who's been the best player in 2022. There's also a sense for me where I wanna see it from Djokovic. It's been a while. It's been a while since I've seen Novak at his best at a slam. At his very, very best, his peak. Don't think we saw it at Wimbledon last year. I thought he was feeling the pressure. He was much better. He's better than Shapovalov or Berrettini. I thought at 80%, 85%. At the US Open, clearly wasn't at his best. Roland Garros, he looked amazing, and then he just, I don't think it was his best performance against Nadal. You know, all these things, it's starting to be like, okay, you know, clock's ticking. I'd like to see it from Novak. So Nadal, I've seen it a couple times already in 2022. That's why I'm going with Rafa here. Let's see if it comes to that. Should be a good event. I'll have coverage, as always, pretty heavily. It will be my focus over the course of the next 2 weeks, and I'm really looking forward to breaking down these matches and covering this event. Of course, on Monday, take a look or keep an eye out for the community tab, because there will be the traditional first Monday of a major mailbag. Until then, hope you enjoyed. Don't forget to subscribe. I'll see you next time.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.